We're on to the first agenda item. Interspecies Committee Report, tab 6. Turn to Frank Blount.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're behind tab 6. There's only one real document there. There is a mistake in the document. I'll get to that when we get there. It's under the fleet visiting project, but we'll correct that when I get into that. The committee met in Boston on April 6th. Not my favorite meeting place, but we got through the day. We started, I highlighted, the first task was to address consolidation of FMPs, and the second task was to examine accumulation caps. And the committee will ask the council, which we discussed yesterday, to assign additional tasks. And the interspecies committee was asked to look at the full retention by the herring committee, but we discussed that yesterday also. And well, that'll be a council decision later. Committee members said we should focus on how to manage and promote consistency across all the plans on elements like starting dates, fishing years, annual catch limits, such as an approach might help simplify the regulations. At that time, the regional administrator commented that we need to avoid being overwhelmed and suggested that we break things into smaller pieces and address individual and use the approach that the consistency amendment adopted in earlier years. She did note that there was considerable overlap on how the fisheries are prosecuted, but management programs do not recognize that. Determining which fisheries overlap and which of these determining which fisheries have the most overlap is the first step to address this issue. We had several comments from the audience, or actually quite a few comments, that said we should examine issues related to National Standard 8 on the impact of communities, that we might want to consider the approach that acknowledges there are two fleets, the inshore fleet and the offshore fleet, and that we should also look at a full investigation of all the catch that occurs in all the fisheries. So those are most of the comments that we there are other comments as well. You can see them in the report. We get into the consolidation, and after a lot of discussion, it was determined which fisheries we thought might be the most appropriate. Some of them included the monkfish, skate, groundfish, whiting, and herring. One suggestion was herring and mackerel, and it was also suggested that the summer flounder fishery is going to be something that we want to look at with other plans. And without too much ado, I want to get right to the first motion. And the first motion from the committee was to pursue consolidation of multi-species skate and monkfish FMPs and to reach out to the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council for consolidation on monkfish. And that's a committee motion.
Committee motion does not require a second. Discussion from the committee or council? Questions? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Frank, could you provide a summary of the committee's discussion regarding the pros and the cons of such an initiative? It's a very important motion. Obviously, a lot of thought went into it. This is a big-ticket item. So what are the pros and cons that the committee discussed relative to what you're suggesting this council now do?
Okay, I'll start with one of the cons was when you have a joint plan, it's going to get trickier with the Mid-Atlantic, and we saw that yesterday with the dogfish and the omnibus, so that was one of the cons. The pros were that there's so much overlap between the fisheries that we wanted to just simplify it for the fishermen, well, for everybody, the regulators, the agency, and that, you know, every time we do an action now, you have to amend three plans. Where if we can consolidate these plans somewhat into one plan, it won't take multiple actions and frameworks and amendments and different public hearings to try and Just try and streamline the process was the biggest pro.
Was the committee able to draw on any analyses or any commentary by the staff, council staff, consolidation of plans, something similar to this obviously has been considered in the past by this council, and it went to a certain point and then stopped, and I can't recall all the history, but so was there anything provided by the staff that would have lent support to this sort of initiative?
Ann gave a brief presentation, and she can answer.
We haven't done extensive analysis on this yet, and the materials that were used to look at it before, either we don't have or weren't directly relevant. So it's something that we'd have to develop the analysis for from this point, bring back to the committee.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Back to the council. Jimmy?
Yeah, I think one of the issues that was discussed is where the Monkfish is a joint plan, that we'd have to figure out a way to, take it over, maybe, maybe some kind of negotiation with the MID that they would get some seats on the committee or something so that they would have some input. Because I think if you combine this, it would be very difficult to continue to have one segment of it be a joint plan. So that's going to be a difficult negotiation, and it probably is going to have the chairman step in and talk to him about how they would see that and how we could move that along. That's the complicating factor in this particular proposal, is the fact that the Monkfish is a joint plan.
Early?
Well, Rick Robbins is a member of that committee. He was not able to attend that day, so we do have a member.
Dr. Pierce?
I have to assume that one of the motivations for going in this direction would be catch share management, and that we have catch share management in the multi-species fisheries right now. We're further developing catch management for the future, maybe going to ITQs, who knows. But anyways, we're going in that direction in a major way. So I'm assuming that the committee was thinking that there will be a need for us to do catch share management with skates and monkfish, notably. I think there's been some discussion about that already. So is that one of the motivating factors for doing this, that it would make sense to go in this direction in the context of some overarching catch share management strategy? And if that's the case, then was any consideration given to folding in other species as part of that objective, catch share management?
Other committee members can correct me, but I don't think when we made this motion that the catch shares was part of the discussion.
Dave Gafel?
Yeah. I think, Dave, one of the idea was to kind of see if we could do it, first of all. And this seemed like the most logical group of species to work with, since they essentially all swim together. And the way we envisioned possibly looking at it was take the common elements and try and move them together. So, you know, take the groundfish elements in skates and monkfish, and that would be kind of a major unit, and then let the separate aspects of these plans, like monkfish being caught in the scallop fishery or the fishery down in North Carolina or something like that, and keep those components perhaps as they are now but part of the plan, so that you didn't have to reinvent everything all over again. My vision anyway was that this would be a form of moving towards ecosystem management. In essence, these were a group of fish that more or less were together. There was some talk about, you know, well, let's add in, say, dogfish or some other fish, and it was felt that because they had less commonality with this group than they may have had with other groups, that at the time this would be complicated enough to do. Let's just start with this, and it would be kind of like a pilot project. If we could pull this off and actually do it, then we could consider other assemblages as a committee in the future once we kind of had a way of actually moving this forward.
Terry?
Yeah, the inclusion of the reaching out to the MID for consultation on months was actually very deliberately linked to CAT chairs with the upcoming Amendment 6. And you know, we have been working with the MID on this discussion. Both, you know, I know Chairman's been working with Rick, and I've been working with Howard and Pete Himchek towards developing an approach to beginning Amendment 6 and what common goals are going to be for all. But as David said, as it's a mixed stock fishery here that these boats are landing, and there's the necessity to think a little bit broader than we've been doing. One action seems to trip over another.
Mr. Libby?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. It just makes sense to me. This is what we catch when we go fishing in my area, catch all these species all at the same time. So it makes sense. I realize there might be some hurdles, but I think it's worth pursuing. I would support this.
Anyone else on the council? Gene.
Yeah, just considering some practical considerations of what this means, when you say you're doing it as a pilot program, is that meant to be an actual amendment that combines all of these plans? That's more in a pilot program. That's an actual legal regulatory change, you know, with quite a bit of work and effort required. So I'm not sure if it's clear what it would mean to initiate a pilot program to do this. And is it to just put out a straw proposal to combine these plans to see what it would look like without actually recommending it to be implemented as law, or would it be something more formal?
Frank?
Yeah, I must have missed something. I'm not sure, Gene, where you heard the word pilot program. Well, from Dave, yeah. The committee, I mean, it hasn't got that far down, but the intent would be to make this, you know, to go forward and make it a regulation to consolidate the plans. Wouldn't be a pilot program.
And that was sort of the sense of the meeting.
Dave Gaethje?
Yeah, I used the word pilot to indicate that it was, in a sense, of, you know, we have to look at this and see if we could do it. If we can't do it here, it's probably not going to be doable in any other assemblage. So in that sense, it's a pilot. It's a new thing. But, no, it would have the force of law, and, you know, it would probably mean simultaneously amending all three plans, you know, some kind of an omnibus amendment. We don't know yet. But the idea of the pilot was just to see if it could be done, rather than taking four or five assemblages and saying we're going to work on them all at the same time and getting a, you know, hopelessly muddled, you know, trying to work on them all at once.
Anyone else in the council? Erling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not a member of this committee of interspecies or a voting member of the council, but I will be in favor of this motion from my point of view.
Thank you, Erling. Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, support this motion. I did at the committee. I wanted to make just some overall comments and some that several people made at the Interspecies Committee. And my thinking has been and really remains that the Interspecies Committee should be up at the 30,000-foot level looking at some of these issues, and that that the sort of piece-by-piece aspect, although I don't disagree with it, is going to take us a lot longer. I think back to when I had a Suburban that I was trying to get several hundred thousand miles out of, and it started to nickel and dime me, and I kept going back to get service done on it, and owner said to me one day, standing in front of the service department, he said, what you need to do is buy a new vehicle. And the service department guy said, Joe, he is buying a new vehicle. He's just doing it piece by piece. So I sort of equate that to what we're doing. I think, you know, the opportunity for the Interspecies Committee is to look at the idea of truly buying a new vehicle, you know, and what are the pros and the cons of that. And I don't think necessarily it would be easy, you know, but I know that if we use this committee to do the piece by piece aspects on a continuing basis, that essentially it's business as usual, but it's just done with a different committee. So they're just some general thoughts.
Dr. Jim.
Thank you. I just had a question. I wondered if the committee had any discussion about how this might impact the assessment schedule. Right now with the multi-species, they tend to be done as a group. When some assessment updates are due or a benchmark, those are all done. So I was wondering if individual assessments would still be considered necessary. I think they would. And Dave Gaethel mentioned moving towards an ecosystem approach. So I just wondered if, in terms of the assessment cycle, if there was any thought given about that.
Not that I recall.
So you're going on record saying the Science Center can still provide annual assessments for all of the stocks, right? That's a commitment from the center?
My microphone just broke.
Anyone else on the council?
No, we're not going on the record to say that.
You're
just make it clear. We are not on the record to say that.
Paul Howard.
Was there any expectation or discussion that if you put all these species under one plan, you'd have the same management strategy under that plan? Because I would think that would be kind of a goal. The reason they're separated now by management's, input controls and output controls and all this, they're all different, and it makes it easier because the three of them are different if you have them in separate plans. I would think that one of the goals, if you put them under the same plan, you'd want to have the same management strategy, whether it be sectors or days at sea or whatever. That would be kind of a goal. Otherwise, you've got one plan that you're going to amend with, you know, two or three different types of management controls.
The committee was looking for buy-in from the council on what species to combine before it got into exactly how they wanted to manage them. So we're a long way from goals and objectives, but that would probably be the next meeting. If this is approved, I would imagine that would come up at the next meeting on how we want to proceed.
Anyone else on the council? Okay. You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Frank?
Okay. We next had a couple of public comments, and one was from Donald Fox, who brought his issue to the council before about being able to fish in the two different areas for winter flounder. Hopefully everybody remembers the issue. There's no need to look into it. I guess there's been some email exchanges, and the service has looked into it, and there is a way to do that. And I don't want to go into details, but I guess he can fish in one area. I think he can start the trip in southern New England and not retain the fish and then go to George's, and he can retain them. But his issue has been addressed and taken care of. We next had a presentation from the Fleet Visioning. There is a mistake in our handout here. It says there were five broad themes. The five broad themes are actually the Science Center's themes. The Fleet Visioning, they had four themes, which were fleet diversity, economic viability, environmental, I can't read my own writing, what does it add? I'm sorry. Sustainability, I believe, environmental sustainability, and participatory governance with a four from the fleet visioning. The committee took those under advisement and said we will discuss them at the next meeting, and that was a vote of the committee. It's not a motion for the council, but we will be looking at those to see if we want to proceed with that, and it will pass 10-0 with the committee. If anybody had any questions on the fleet visioning. Okay, that's the same report the council had previously. Next, on page 5, accumulation limits for sectors. Ann gave us a brief overview, and one of the issues that needs to be addressed is what is an excessive share. Ann noted that there are three types of possible caps: vessel usage limits, control limits, and sector limits. She also pointed out a control date might prove useful and alert the industry that a cap might be adopted in the future. After quite a bit of discussion and several different motions of being perfected and changed, the committee ended up with a motion that accumulation limits for groundfish sectors or permit holders be developed to meet the following goals: comply with National Standard 4 and define prevent excessive share consolidation in order to maintain some fleet diversity. And that was a committee motion, and it passed 10-0.
Discussion. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the goal of this, but there are a couple of problems with this motion as it sits. I think we need to eliminate sectors. There should be accumulation limits for permit holders. And we haven't defined exactly what we mean by the expression fleet diversity. So I would suggest that we put a period after excessive consolidation and rid ourselves of the in order to maintain some fleet diversity. And in fact, I will make that as a motion to amend, eliminate groundfish sectors and everything after excessive consolidation. And if I get a second, I'll give more detail on that.
Okay, we have a motion to amend. It's on the board. Is there a second? Seconded by Mary Beth Tooley. Discussion, Dave?
Yeah, first of all, as far as the section on sectors, I think that accumulation limits for sectors is handled by having the accumulation limits on permit holders. I think sectors is just going to be too hard to handle. As far as the excessive consolidation, there are a number of reasons for preventing excessive consolidation. Fleet diversity is one, but it's only one. We also need to prevent excessive consolidation to preserve the market forces that we're trying to create. And excessive consolidation would result in one person controlling, having excessive control over the market. We haven't really identified at what point that would be. That needs to be considered. As far as fleet diversity is concerned, we do not have any definition of what we mean by fleet diversity. So if we are going to try to prevent excess consolidation in order to maintain fleet diversity, we have to have a little better understanding of what that term means and what it means to us specifically. So I think it's out of place in the in the motion at this point. And I would point out that the character of the fleet will be determined by more than one thing. And one thing is going to be the at what point the business is most efficient. And if we maintain the market forces, there will be some fleet structure that will emerge from it. It may be what we want. It may not be. And any changes that we make in order to alter fleet diversity, we have to understand that at some point, or to some extent, that's going to reduce the overall fleet efficiency. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It may be a good thing. It may be desirable. It may be what we want to do. But
but we have to understand what the costs of it are. And we don't have any understanding of that at this point, particularly since we don't know what we mean by fleet diversity. So I think we're not at a point where we can be talking about preventing excessive consolidation in order to maintain something that we don't even know what it is. So I could not support the motion with that in it at this point. We want to define and prevent excessive consolidation, period. That's what we want to do. Thank you.
Mark Alexander.
I was sort of thinking along those lines as well. I would have added the words disparate redistribution of fishing privileges, too. I you know, excessive consolidation, maybe that implies that, but it's not clear to me.
Maybe we can chew on that. Jimmy?
Yeah, I can support this amendment. I just have a couple of points. You know, Amendment 16 was designed to allow for consolidation. We know full well that we need consolidation given the fact that some of these stocks are so small. So I want to be very careful that we start with control dates and things like that. You just freeze up any kind of credit facility that people can possibly get to try to accomplish some of the goals that we had in Amendment 16. And the other question I had is, the only problem I see with this is, are we implying that we're not in compliance? Are we implying that we're not in compliance of that Amendment 16 for some reason isn't in compliance with National Standard 4? You know, that's... I just wonder about that.
Pat Kirkle.
Yeah, on that point, and then more generally, on that point, I took the motion to mean that, and I don't actually see the reason for putting it in there, but I took the motion to mean that anything we developed would have to be in compliance with National Standard 4, which is, of course, always true. And, you know, Amendment 16 has been determined to be in compliance with National Standard 4. So I don't think that's the issue. I know the committee struggled with the wording of this, and if I remember correctly, and I may not, that we started with something like to maintain diversity, and people were uncomfortable with that. And so we sort of worked our way to just something that could potentially eliminate the small boat, the day boat fishery. I would have been a lot more comfortable with the motion if it actually stopped after, or if it said accumulation limits for groundfish sectors or individual permit holders be developed to meet the, be developed, period. But I think the committee struggled with that a little bit, too, because then it doesn't say why, and at some point we need to say why. So I don't know how I feel about this motion yet, because we do need to say exactly what the goal is somewhere. And if this isn't the goal, then we should figure out what the goal is.
Dr. Pierce.
My preference is to make it clear that the motion is specific to the groundfish fishery. And frankly, I like the wording of the original motion because it does reference sectors specifically. And the reason why my preference is there is I refer to the final rule, the April 9th final rule, published by the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Federal Register, and there's some very excellent and informative discussion within the federal rule relative to the removal of the cap, the 20% cap, which is all about consolidation, sectors specifically. There's a statement in here that I really like, and I wonder if this statement somehow can be modified and maybe even used as a substitute for this particular motion, but I haven't got the language yet. But let me reference it. And this is on page 18296 of the Federal Register, and it's a response of the National Marine Fisheries Service to a comment, a very good comment, set of comments actually made by by Pew, the Conservation Land Foundation, the Cape Cod Hook Fishermen's Association, and other groups. I believe EDF also was involved in this particular comment that they made about consolidation, excessive consolidation, and reflects some of the points, many of the points that were made by Sally earlier on in previous council meeting. And the point that the text that I refer to is this, and it's relevant to the Interspecies Committee. And it says, again, this is NIMS' response to that comment. NIMS will work with the Council's Interspecies Committee to consider developing measures that would address the issue of sector ACEs as they relate to the FMP's social and economic objectives, the Council's sector management policy, the national policy on catch share management, and the requirements of the National Standard 4. So that's a nice set of criteria, so to speak, for us to use regarding consolidation and excessive consolidation that, of course, is not defined. We're exploring that in a major way. So that's what I see are working towards, or the Interspecies Committee should be working towards that aim, an aim that is relevant to the objectives that we already have within our management plan, the social and economic objectives, and then, of course, our sector management policy that we tend to forget about and, frankly, ignore to our detriment. And then this national policy on catch share management that the Interspecies Committee has already commented on. The Division of Marine Fisheries has already submitted extensive comments on that policy, and every council member has a copy of it. It was emailed to you. And then, of course, National Standard Number 4. So those are the criteria we should be referring to. And another reason why I feel we should is that after we're through with this motion, we're then going to get on to another very good motion that was made by the committee and actually was offered up by Sally and David Preble. And this is the baseline measures. Where are we right now? What did we do? I don't know what we did with Amendment Number 16. The analyses are iffy, and that's admitted to, because we didn't have everything in hand. Sector membership was not known. The hard quotas were not known. Shares were not known. And we've really gone into some wilderness areas, and the trails are not marked. So I'd like to know where we've been and where we're going to be on May 1. So, anyways, I'm glad the second motion has been made. It's very relevant to the motion on the board right now. And it's moving me towards going with the first motion that's up there, the one that was made by the Species Committee, the Interspecies Committee itself. Those are my thoughts on the motion.
Dr. Pierce, so your preference is to maintain a focus on sectors and not on individuals having an accumulation cap?
Yes, especially in the context of the comments that were made in Amendment 16 and the responses of the National Marine Fisheries Service. And indeed, we're going to be working with sectors for a while to come. We're far away from any other kind of catch share management policy, I suspect. This is what we've got, so let's work with it, and let's be specific, therefore, with our motion to sectors in the context of consolidation, excessive consolidation specifically.
Okay, thank you. I had Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In general, I agree with the comments of that were made to correct this. I think, though, that one of the words that I begin to have problems with is the word excessive, because that's a relative term. We're going to this afternoon address red crab. You got very few permits in that entire fishery. So if you have something, you know, that excessive in one fishery may not be the same in another fishery. As we were having this discussion at the committee level, I still wonder whether we want to be doing, at what level do we want to put in limits for accumulation? Is it at the individual level? Is it at the sector level? Or is it at a bigger group, an association, a group of sectors? Those are all things that need to be considered. When we narrow it just down to ground fish sectors, sort of gets back to my earlier comment, and that is, why isn't that a groundfish committee issue rather than interspecies? It's focusing on something that's strictly focused on groundfish. In general, I support this because I think we're still at the stage where we're just putting together all of the ideas on it rather than necessarily having to cobble together right now the final language. But, you know, I think that there are, as if we develop something like this, there are a lot of issues for us to consider and debate. Thank you.
Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am more comfortable with the original motion. I could see some modification, as Rip was talking about, why are we talking specifically about groundfish, but my preference would be to leave the word sectors or permit holders in there and take out groundfish. I agree with Dave in one point in his motion. I believe we need to have goals, and I believe that we need to have as one of the goals define and prevent excessive consolidation in order to maintain some fleet diversity. And he also talked about maintaining market forces. I think that's another thing that we should add in here. And I believe maintaining some fleet diversity is an important thing to put in there as a vision for us to have here in the goals. So as this motion is amended, I'm going to vote against it. But if it does not pass, then I would be prepared to make a couple other amendments that I feel would work best for this. I think we have to be a lot more clearer on this than what Mr. Preble's amendment is.
Sally.
Thank you. We're getting there, and I think everybody recognizes that this is an evolving discussion from Amendment 16, which did eliminate what was a fairly arbitrary cap of 20% for Georges Bank Cod for sectors to hold. That was something that I think was important to eliminate, as far as giving the opportunity for sectors to form and function the way people expect them to. At the same time, in Amendment 16, which is where part of this motion originated, there was a recognition of the vulnerability of the inshore fleet under changing rules. That did not turn into regulation, which is why we are where we are today. The committee did discuss whether it seemed appropriate to focus on accumulation limits for sectors or for individuals. Part of the discussion, and my recollection is that by focusing on individuals, you're focusing on the potential for long-term market control. And as people discussed throughout the development of Amendment 16, we heard from a number of people in industry that having a cap on sectors would potentially just force a group to split into two and then trade amongst themselves, creating an additional bureaucratic burden that doesn't serve any purpose in terms of controlling accumulation, but focusing on the individual does. So that's how that discussion kind of evolved from sectors to individuals. And I guess I would ask for a clarification from the maker of the motion if there was the intent to have it be so broad and not focus just on groundfish, or if really the intention is still to focus on the groundfish fishery.
Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Based on the discussion, this has been a very useful, fruitful discussion. Based on the discussion, I would perfect this motion. I think we can say that accumulation limits for sectors and or permit holders. So we have the option as we develop this to go either way. Be developed to meet the following goals. Comply with NS 4 and 2. define and prevent excessive consolidation. And I want to get in here some wording, as Doug pointed out, on market forces. As long as we have market forces in there, I can live with the fleet diversity. Because at some point, we're going to have to define what we mean by fleet diversity. I agree that we need to protect the small boat fishery. I have a warm place in my heart for the inshore small boat fishery. So if we can word that, then I'm perfectly willing to perfect this amendment. I still think that the original was defective. It needed to be perfected. So sectors and or permit holders be developed to meet the following goals, comply with NS4. I'm ambivalent about that. We can leave it in or take it out because, as was pointed out, we have to do that anyway. And two, to define and prevent excessive consolidation to protect market forces. And again, I'm open to any changes in the wording here. And maintain some fleet diversity. And or. And I'm willing to work with the wording here.
Let me just give you an idea of what I'm thinking about right now. I have you on the list. I think we could spend the rest of today trying to perfect this motion and get it right, or we could go through the motion to amend and the main motion, and if we vote both of them down, have a brief discussion as a body about what to send back to the Interspecies Committee, the elements that we want the Interspecies Committee to consider to come back to us in June on this important matter. Or we can stay here and try to nail it right. But I see it, in my opinion, moving in that direction as opposed to putting terms like market forces into the motion. I'm not sure we as a body understand what those market forces are. There's a lot of them. And a lot of them we don't have any control over. So I'll go back, Dave.
Yeah, with that in mind, if that's the intent, then I'll withdraw the amendment.
I could take a sense of the council. Is there objection to proceeding with the withdrawal of an amendment that's been debated? Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, we'll strike the amendment. We're back on the main motion. Further discussion on the main motion? Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I think the reason not only the committee had problems with this, but now the full council is having problems with it, is that there is not a clear sense of where the body as a whole doesn't want to move in the same direction. There are, you know, some people, both within the industry and within the council, that want to get on with buying each other up as fast as possible to turn it into Mega Fishco. And there are other people, such as myself, that believe that consolidation is not a good thing, that job opportunities are more important, and that once we undergo consolidation, we can't undo it. And that if we have to slow this down and make it very clear to everybody that, you know, we're slowing it down, and if that freezes up your credit, well, you know, so be it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry your credit got frozen. But as somebody who's about to be consolidated out of existence, I'd rather spend a little more time trying to fix it. And if the people that want to consolidate, their credit dries up and they go out of business, well, you know, then they're in the same boat I'm in right now. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for that argument. You know, I did want to just read something quickly into the record here on the effects of consolidation. This is something I testified to at Congress last week. It's a paper by Dr. Julia Olson from the Science Center. And it says, and it's underlined to emphasize it on her part, the primary social impacts that have been documented in empirical cases involving consolidation range from employment loss, decreased income, decreased quality of life, changing relations of production, structural disadvantages to smaller vessels and firms, dependency and debt patronage, concentration of capital and market power, inequitable gains, regulatory stickiness, reduced stewardship, decreased community stability, and loss of cultural values. That's a pretty damning statement. And, you know, I think this council ought to take it slow. And you know, we have a real duty here to get this right. If we wipe entire
fishing communities off the map and wipe entire states out of the fishery, that's a big thing. At least it is to me. And so, you know, I have no problem with this motion as written. You know, yes, it's a little bit vague. Personally, I'd like it to be a lot stronger. But again, in order to get buy-in from the entire council, sometimes you have to leave things a little bit vague so that they satisfy everybody's ability to have political cover. So those are my thoughts anyway. I would certainly be prepared to vote for this motion as written.
Jimmy?
No, I can support this motion. Just a couple comments. One was following up on Rip's observation comment was, now that if this motion passes, it's clearly dealing with groundfish. Is it an interspecies issue, or does it then become a groundfish committee problem? That's number one. And number two, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, just to restate my comment that I think got this train rolling was, I was essentially suggesting we'd vote all of this down and spend a little bit of time tasking the interspecies committee on coming back to us in June with a better, more developed motion that incorporates some of the things Dr. Pierce raised and possibly brings in at a higher elevation like Rip was talking about. Richard?
Just to correct something for the record about Julia Olson, the reference to Julia Olson's report, that report was actually a literature review, so it wasn't a scientific report. And it was actually about the scallop fishery. It was not about catch shares. It was about leasing and stacking measures.
Dave?
Yeah, I contacted her. She has a paper in publication that says the exact same quote is in it. It's been sent out to a peer-reviewed journal, but I can't use it yet because it hasn't been published.
Mr. Libby?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I support this. I think what this is doing is just giving direction. It's saying start. It's not real specific. I don't think we need to waste a lot more time trying to define it. I think it directs the committee to do what we want it to do. Thank you.
Mark?
I support it too, but I do have a problem with the word some that appears before fleet diversity. The some being in there seems to suggest that we have a tolerance for the loss of more than a minor amount of the current diversity. I think that word should just be struck from there.
Mark Gibson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think Mr. Libby summed it up well. The discussions around the table, I think, have given adequate guidance as to how this motion can be acted on. I have a question relative to accumulation limits. Any motion along these lines, can permit holders be construed to be permit banks? And is there contemplation that permit banks would have limits placed on them through this further developments of this? There are several states and entities that have initiatives in permit banks.
Well, right now, a sector has to have at least three independent individuals, or there can be no relationship between three of the participants in a sector. And so you've got that kind of an issue. And then beyond that, I don't think that, I mean, we do have a sector that's, at least one sector that's essentially a permit bank now. So there's nothing preventing that. But that's the kind of thing that the council should be talking about.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that I would be more supportive of the thought process that you laid out to vote this motion down and to think about how we'd like to task the committee to move forward. I seconded the motion to amend because It removed the reference to sectors, which I thought was more appropriate to focus more on permit holders and not on sectors. And in general, I think I would agree with your thought process to vote this down and task the committee.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I intend to vote it down as well because I think that there are a number of defects in the motion. It says the accumulation limits for ground fish sectors or permit holders be developed. It doesn't say developed by whom, and the proper place for if it is ground fish sectors or permit holders that we're aiming this toward, the proper place for its development would be the Ground Fish Committee and not the Interspecies Committee. So absent some clarification of now three issues in the motion, I can't support it as it sits.
Sally?
Makes me nervous to consider voting it down, so I would look to you, Mr. Chairman, to make sure that we're going to continue the discussion today and you'll entertain additional motions on this subject so that we can keep things moving and task the relevant committees, whether it's interspecies or groundfish, to keep this subject alive so that we could be addressing it and so that it's clear to industry that this is something that is very much on the front burner.
Yeah, it's not my intent to, if this gets voted down, to just move on. I want to continue to have a discussion and perhaps make a motion as a body to direct the Interspecies Committee, or if we're going to work specifically on groundfish issues, the Groundfish Committee to take up these issues. I'm going to go to the audience. Brett?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brett Tolley. I work with NAMA, the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance. And I also come from a fishing family. My father, grandfather, and uncles are all 40-plus year commercial fishermen. My brother as well has fished for over 20 years. So I'm speaking on behalf of both NAMA and my family. I just wanted to make a couple comments on the Fleet Vision presentation that we made to the committee a couple weeks ago. And I also wanted to point out that we sent a letter to the council sort of to recap and highlight some of the presentation points we really wanted to get across. So that should be in your binder. Our goal here is really to offer the council a tool to really ground all of the sort of conversation that we're having here today in a set of values that really reflects what we believe is the most authentic voice of the New England community. We believe this really could work as a tool, sort of as Dave Preble put it yesterday, to reduce all the wheel spinning that happens in the council. A lot of work and time went into this project, and I won't get into all the detail right now, but just quickly, it was a process that took 2 years. It included a very diverse group of stakeholders that included fishermen from all different gear types and geographic locations. And the outcomes were these: a diverse fleet, an economically viable fleet, an environmentally sustainable fleet, and a fleet managed through a participatory governance structure. And there's, you know, these terms are sort of broken down into more detail in the report. So we'd like to continue working with the Interspecies Committee to identify concrete ways that we can use these Fleet Vision outcomes to move forward. And one example would be to use the Fleet Vision outcomes to sort of ground the discussion when trying to identify key terms. And in the context of this conversation right now, one key term would be fleet diversity. So I just wanted to take a second and read what the Fleet Vision outcome was in terms of fleet diversity. This is what it was. The vision calls for a geographically distributed commercial and recreational fleet that includes all gear types and boat sizes. The community values and understands the need for many different boat sizes and gear types that provide diverse products to markets. The community strongly dislikes the possibility of a fleet that is consolidated either by ownership or geography, and participants in this project advocate many jobs and coastal community welfare over economic efficiency. So as the council continues and the committee continues trying to identify these terms, we urge that those conversations be grounded in this sort of vision and voice of the New England community, and that the council seriously take into consideration all the time, effort, and money that went into this project. You know, so moving forward, we would like to urge the council to adopt these visions, and we look forward to working with the Interspecies Committee moving forward. Thank you.
Peter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council, Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. We think this is a very important conversation. Not sure whether it should be thought of in terms of moving fast or moving slow, but it should certainly be tackled in a deliberate manner, where the council is mindful of as many consequences of its decisions on the fleet composition as it can be, understanding, of course, that the council's actions are in a dance with the market that's very difficult, impossible, and futile to try to completely control. I think it should be a very high priority. There are a number of activities that are looming that relate very much to the council's decision-making here. Brett just talked about the fleet vision process, which the council said it's going to take up. There is also discussion about different buyout programs in the groundfish fishery, which CLF has in the past supported under certain conditions, and we would certainly positively think about a buyout program that was designed to produce a council driven vision for the fleet rather than just something was money thrown at a particular fishery. I did want to talk a little bit about the consolidation issue and the importance of defining it. And there's been some discussion today already, and there was discussion before about whether this is just the ground fishery or whether it's broader than that. I think this kind of analysis ought to be in every fishery management plan, whether it's an emergent fishery where the consolidation issues haven't developed yet, but will. The capitalization issues haven't developed yet, but they will. I think this should be in every fishery management plan that the council looks at as a topic, and in some cases it won't really bear much scrutiny. In other cases it might be a central issue for the council. So I would like to see this broadly defined. I think certainly the ground fishery is one of the priority areas at the moment, but I think it could be developed, move forward on a couple of planes. I was struck also at the Interspecies Committee meeting, and CLF has certainly thought about this before, about, you know, consolidation might mean, or optimum fleet composition might look very different for an inshore fleet and an offshore fleet. And I think that the discussion that David alluded to between people's value systems around their fishing operations that is embedded in the council membership reflects that. And I think that the discussion ought to be big enough to accommodate both visions because they're both legitimate parts of the fishery and important in their own respect. Another reason that I think that the scope of the consolidation discussion ought to be broad is, for example, we hear a lot of discussion in the press about the impact of Amendment 16 and how many people are going to be out of the fishery. And 50% is a term that the mayor of New Bedford has talked about, has referred to. And, you know, that would be alarming to everybody, conservationists, fishermen, everybody, if that's true. From what I know, out of the fishery is kind of a vague concept. There are certainly people who have been, over the years, forced out of the fishery. They haven't been able to compete, and they're gone. Their boats are sold, their permits are being fished by somebody else. They're out of the fishery, and they're carpenters or whatever they're doing now, retired. But there are other people who are out of the ground fishery, but they're quite successfully still fishing in other fisheries. Is that a failure? I mean, have they been consolidated in a way that the council should find objectionable, Or is this part of sort of a natural movement of fishing operations, maybe between species, maybe it's still a healthy fleet, it's just composed of people pursuing different species. And I would think that would be a good thing, but it isn't if we continue to think about consolidation very narrowly as just being defined to every fishery has to include some of everybody from every state. I think the council really has compounded the task that it has would take on itself if it did that. So I think the consolidation question has to be thought of broadly and thought about a healthy fleet engaged in a lot of fisheries. And that's no easy task. And part of the – but I don't think it's impossible. Part of the challenge there, at least for a member of the public, is so much of our information comes from anecdotes. You know, people get up at the mic and they say what they're doing, or other people say what other people are doing, and other folks say how many people are in or out of the fishery and what that means to them. I think this consolidation question has to be a data-driven process. And there really, at this point in time, ought to be the social economic data available to answer some of these questions about how people are moving in and out of the fishery and around the fishery, full-time versus part-time jobs. I mean, that's something you all probably need to discuss. Is it better having 40 one-day-a-month kinds of fishing opportunities or one full-month fishing opportunity? I don't have an answer to that. I think, again, it depends on the fleet and the different people in the fishery, and there could be a lot of outcomes, but we need to have some data for the council to actually be responsible about some of the choices it's making. And I know a lot of this is proprietary and can't come out to the public because it exposes individual positions in the fisheries. And for some reason in fisheries, that's not tolerated, unlike a lot of other public resource management areas. But I think the council needs to work with its staff and NIMS to, in some capacity, have access to that information, even on an executive kind of basis. So it has some sense of the consequences of both where the fisheries are and where they would like them to go. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Peter. Ron?
Well, Ron Smolowitz, Cape Cod farmer, grow lettuce, oysters, alpacas. I would agree with previous speakers and agree with the chairman. I would suggest that this motion be voted down. I think at this point it would be a much better step to start at ground zero and develop a vision statement, an interspecies vision statement, not a groundfish vision statement. Obviously, I've advocated over the years that we have to manage with two fleets, an inshore fleet and an offshore fleet, two totally different visions for each fleet. And just 2 points. One, the U.S. meat industry, it has four big producers that produce 80% of the country's meat. The other 20% is produced by thousands of producers, two totally different cultures, and it's not set by the government. Consolidation cannot be controlled by a number restricting ownership. It doesn't work. They don't even discuss that when they try to control banking now in the, you know, the debate going on in Congress. It's controlled by the tools that you allow a person to use. I mean, in France, they don't allow a store to be more than 10,000 square feet in areas they want to protect rural character. Town of Falmouth has 170 commercial shellfishermen because you only could harvest shellfish using a bull rake because the communities make a decision of what their vision is. And the vision for inshore is going to have to be different from offshore. So I think there's a lot of room for discussion, and that's the interspecies should just be given a very simple, broad task, develop a vision for the fleets of New England and start from there.
Maggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to admit that I'm very confused by a lot of this discussion. When the council, in its last meeting, gave a task to the Interspecies Committee, The motion that was passed was vague, but the discussion surrounding it was that the committee should look at accumulation caps on sectors. And somehow when it got to the committee, it became an issue of accumulation caps on sectors and on individuals. So I would agree with you that whatever happens with this motion, that whatever direction is given, that more clear direction needs to be given to the committee. I also wondered at that time, at the last meeting, why that particular issue on accumulation caps on sectors was being sent to the Interspecies Committee as opposed to the Groundfish Committee. But nevertheless, that's what happened. Also, that motion that the council made at the last meeting was amended to specifically say that the Interspecies Committee was supposed to look at this after they had done their after they had looked at combining some FMPs. So, again, the direction to the committee has not been very clear on what they should be doing. And that's how you end up in a situation like we're in right now with what I think is a very confused discussion. But regardless of how you feel about this whole issue, whether you think there should be accumulation caps or not, this is a really big job for the council to undertake. And the council, and if it is specific to groundfish, the council decided back in September that you weren't going to do anything with groundfish this year in your priorities. Now, we at Associated Fisheries of Maine had asked you 4 years ago to do an ITQ in groundfish, and that is where you would have discussions like this about ownership accumulations. But the council decided, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do an ITQ in groundfish. We're not going to do anything in groundfish. And now we're talking about doing this major groundfish action. So, again, I'm really confused about where we're going. I don't understand what the goal of this is, why we're having a discussion about this when the council decided that they weren't going to do groundfish. If we're going to do groundfish this year, let's have a broad, encompassing discussion about what needs to be done in groundfish, not this one issue. So, thank you.
Harriet?
Harriet Diedrichson, I got one boat, one permit from the Port of New Bedford. As I listen to the discussion, and I've listened to the discussions over time, and we're talking here like nothing's ever happened. We all know what's happened in the surf clam ocean quahog fishery. It's down to very few people. So we know what happens. So when you talk about the national standards, I would have thought when you were going to do Amendment 16, you would have gone by those national standards and made sure they were followed and made sure that the result of your amendment would provide the safety nets of the national standards. I personally don't see that that has happened, and a lot of other people do not see it. You call it catch shares, you call it quotas, because now I see that they use the word catch shares for the ITQs in the surf clam fishery, which has been called ITQs for many years, and that's what it is. And it's down to very few owners. And the reauthorization of Magnuson asked with money available that a paper be written on capacity. And I've read that 26-page paper, and that paper refers to many fisheries. The surf clam fishery and the ocean quahog, it has overcapacity, but they say that's the way they want it. And capacity in that paper does not refer to the number of boats. It says you can have many boats and you can have a few boats and they can be the same capacity because you have bigger boats of bigger capacity. So it comes down to what you want to choose. Do you want to have your communities, do you want to have fishing communities, or do you not want to have fishing communities? It becomes a matter of choice, but it's not actually a complete choice because we're doing everything here to comply with Magnuson, and Magnuson has the national standards. So you should have had to follow those. And with whatever your sector, whatever it is, whatever word, you've made your own definition for it. I don't believe any of it really is in compliance with anything. But that catch share program, it was discussed up in New Hampshire, both by Pat and Maggie was at the microphone saying, well, there will be attrition. So you're already planning people are going to go under, and you're planning that other people are going to buy them. There'll be no less capacity in the fishery, because the point is you want more in a situation like that. So the people who maybe have one permit can't survive, didn't get the right species, didn't get in the right sector, and all these things that were their free choice. I don't think anybody made a free choice to choose themselves to go out of business so they couldn't support their families. So in the end, you're getting rid of people, and those people that buy up those people, they're going to be in a better position with your next move. Your first great move was your stacking and leasing, which was the panacea at that time. Now you've got a new program here. So when you say you're going to be able to, in the future, change things, let's be truthful with each other. You're not going to be able to change things that much. This is a quota system. And what's going to happen is people are going to push out people, like Pat and Maggie agreed to up in New Hampshire. There's going to be attrition. So you're saying you've got a system you know is going to fail people, is going to put people out of business, is going to put it in the hands of other people, and in the next round they're going to be in control, and I don't really know what you're creating here. To me, these things you're looking at today should have been looked at a long time ago, and you haven't conformed with the national standards. You can see it by what's going on here and by the talk. And you're not at spot one. We're a long way down the line, and Julia Olson's paper looks at a lot of places, including Iceland. That's one of the first fishing countries, really, there ever was in real fishing. And they're going away from the ITQ system. It doesn't work. And there's information out there as to what happens with what you're doing here. You can call it anything you want, but the results are the same. Loss of jobs, loss of communities, and pretty soon loss of tourism. Because New England, a lot of people think of coming here and seeing a fishing fleet. In fact, right in Stonington here, when I looked at a condominium a few years ago, 2000 exactly, first thing they told me was they had a small fishing fleet and wanted me to know that. They didn't know I came from a fishing family. So this is going to ruin a lot of things at different times. But you gotta, it's rolling here. And it's not right. There is fish. We all know there's fish. So I feel it's almost something that is premeditated to put people out of business. And when you talk about what's going on Wall Street today, and they're very worried, they got it on C-SPAN all about the derivatives and everything. This right here is something that you know what's gonna happen. You know what's going to happen. What they're talking about applies right here. You know you're going to put people out of business. Don't make believe you don't know that. You do know that. And I think you could make changes. This system is going to go down with few people, just like the surf clam did, although they did it many years ago. We know a lot of things now. People lost their jobs. They live in New Bedford. We never had surf clam boats in New Bedford years ago. Erling here was fishing in New Bedford with my husband in the 60s. We didn't have surf clam boats there, but they're there now. So these fishermen, either they move or they're nomads or whatever you're trying to do. But that's what the result of that was. It isn't good what's going on here. I just want it on the record. Thank you.
Tina.
Tina Jackson with the American Alliance of Fishermen and their communities. Obviously, there are concerns for the small fishing fleet, the inshore fleet. And my concern is as to why this language was removed originally Not only does it indicate that Amendment 16 was not in compliance with Standards 2 and 4, it also seems that there are several stakeholders who already own a large portion of their sector, some of them already up to 60%. And obviously, if there is a cap on some type of leasing or a cap on stacking, you're not going to be able to force those people to sell their 60% or 40% or whatever the case may be. The only thing that that really does is if you put a 10% cap down on it or a 20% cap down on it, it prevents them from selling out to a large corporation their entire percentage. My concern is not only for the inshore fleet, but also for the large offshore boats who have very low allocations. And actually, they may even have large allocations, but they have low allocations of choke stocks. They may be forced to sell out to those stakeholders, otherwise lose out the opportunity to fish, stay tied to the dock, and or still, you know, give out to creating or selling, creating a monopoly of sorts to the people who already own those large portions. Obviously, there are people who are against this that already own a large portion of their sector. So they're up here telling you, I would vote down this measure based on their own benefit. I will state for the record that the cap will not affect those who already own that 60% or so, as I said prior. You know, large corporations have many subsidiaries. So even if a cap is put onto it, one person can still sell out to a large corporation and then 10% to their subsidiary and then another 10% to another portion of the subsidiary. So in essence, one large corporation can, in fact, hold all the fish all the way down the line. And I have to fully agree with Harriet that this is intentional. Everybody knows where I stand on this particular issue. One only has to look at the crab industry in Alaska. I mean, you have 280 working crab boats. Now we're down to 56 just 3 years later. I mean, the job loss is just incredible. Catch shares don't work. They just don't work. We all know this. I mean, consolidation is being the forefront that it's necessary. It's not necessary. You don't put hardworking, taxpaying people out of work, especially fishermen. We risk our lives, and I think that's overlooked quite a bit. There's plenty of fish out there. It's already proven by the new trawl surveys, which won't be implemented on stock assessments for another 2 years because they say they need more time. I mean, when I look at the charts and the graphs, they go from very, you know, small increases prior to straight up off the charts. I mean, they had 85,000 pounds of dogfish. 62% of spring last year's spring trawl survey was all dogfish. The next in line was skate. And those are two of our major choke stocks, and we can't fast-track those to even help the sectors. I'd have to say that, you know, this, if one does take a look at Iceland's fisheries and how they totally collapsed the entire economy, I think one portion that's been overlooked as well is that 42% of America's economy comes from coastal communities just like ours, even though we only make up 16% geographically. That's a hell of a lot of America's economy based on coastal communities just like Rhode Island. And when you put that many people out of work, who else is going to be forced to make up that 42% and or a large portion of that 42% but every other taxpayer in the country? This country is constrained enough. I think that this whole program should have been looked at a lot slower. It was rushed into action. And I, for one, support Dave when he, Mr. Gaethel, when this motion was put on the board, and I urge everybody to consider passing it, and it, even with further discussion, it's appropriate. Thank you.
Mr. Libby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Libby, Port Clyde, Maine. I'm a ground fisherman. I support this. I do think it should be perfected a little bit, maybe in combination with ground fish and interspecies. As far as consolidation goes, it is happening like a lot of the previous speakers. And I like the comments Dave Gaethel made earlier. about wiping out entire communities. Our community's sitting all right with it, but we're in trouble with them, some of the choke stocks. I'm afraid within the sectors that we may run into people getting pushed out and consolidation happening because of those stocks, and I'd like to see some relief from that in some fashion, but I support the motion overall to move it ahead. I still think it should be sent back so that it can be perfected. I think there's some of the things that could be written in better to comply with the national standards. So, all in all, I think it should move ahead. Thanks.
Jim Kendall.
Thank you. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seaver Consulting. I've been involved in fishing for all my adult life in one fashion or another. And a lot of people I know have. One of the previous speakers got up here and said, you know, where are the people who are no longer here? Well, they're not here. You see the same people time in and time out, or day in and day out, and you say, well, everything is fine. Everything's the same with the fishery. Bill Hogarth came to New Bedford some years back and said, I don't know what the problem is. I see you all still here. My reply to him was, what you're seeing is the ones that are still standing, not the ones that have fallen by the wayside. And there have been plenty of them. Rodney Avila did a document a while back that showed how many boats were lost in the fishery at that particular time. You remember how many, Rodney? 72? 172. You know there was at least one or two persons tied to those vessels. Where are they gone? They gone on scallopers? Not likely. Scallopers have been reduced from 13 men down to 8 men. So there's been losses there without even losing a boat. Have they done well? Yes, they have. The ones that are remaining. Don't take this personally, but the majority of this council is not made up of fishing industry people. Yet, you're attempting to design a way of life for them that's going to totally turn around their culture and everything that they've done and worked for and tried to gain over the years, all these years. When I first started fishing, there were plenty of boats around, small wooden boats. Nowadays, they call them inshore boats. Back then, our 60, 70-foot boats were going 100 miles, 150 miles offshore. That's changed. But it's changed because fishing has changed, and we wanted it to change in that direction. Now the smaller boats normally stay close to shore. Over the last few years, we forced some of them to go further than what they would like to, but fishermen do that anyways. Back then, you had a lot of boats, but you had few multi-boat owners. There were a few around, but you didn't find any with 5, 10, 15, 20 permits or vessels. You found individual families fishing individual boats, and that's gone now. It's a way of life you'll never revert to, and some ways it may be better. We got newer boats, we got bigger boats, and a lot of this came about through the first Magnuson Act. They made mistakes, they gave everyone permits, or they said, have at it. So once again, you had all these investors jumping in, saying, well, I'm going to get me a boat. They go to the government gave them easy money, they built boats. Now we're trying to force some of these people out again. Well, we made the problem in the first place, and now we're going to try and rectify it by saying, you know, who has to jump out of this fishery? It's probably, it's inevitable that it's going to occur. You're going to have some sort of contraction and expansion in these fisheries as long as they exist. My problem comes in is when you start coming up with a vision and seeing how it's going to fit for someone else. We have general rules for people that we insist on. You know, thou shalt not kill, honor thy mother and father. These are the general rules. But you don't go up and force someone to make a choice on how they're going to live their life as long as it doesn't normally impact you. And yet, we're trying to do that for an entire culture here. Like I say, if it's inevitable, that's one thing you work towards and making it as best that you can, but I don't think this is the right start for it at this particular point. We don't really know what we're facing with sectors. A lot of us believe we do know. A lot of others say, no, that's not the case. If and when that does occur, and sectors does have the terrible impact that a lot of us feel that it's going to have, then you're going to have your consolidation one way or another. And it's going to happen because some just can't compete in there and just not going to be able to withstand the pressure that's on them. So I would think that the best way to deal with that at this particular point in time is to defeat this motion, take the advice of the chairman, send it back, and work with industry, not against industry, to tell them what they should resemble. Find out from them where we should go with this. And like I say, I don't like the idea of it coming. That I can't argue that. But if it's inevitable, then let's make it the best that we can. And I don't think you're on that particular route right now. So I would ask that you defeat this motion, go back, and send it back to committee, or how you design or how you choose to design this particular motion, so that it can be the best that it can be. Currently, it doesn't stand that way. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I'm going to come back to the council. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think that this has been a very good discussion. But I would like to make a motion to substitute. I would move that the subject of accumulation limits be remanded to the Interspecies Committee for further development, with the intent that the Interspecies Committee would bring this back to the council at the next meeting.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion. Dr. Pierce.
I also got a motion to substitute that's a little bit more, well, it's different than that one, but I'm not going to get into parliamentary messes here. But relative to this motion to substitute, we are indeed looking for a charge to the Interspecies Committee, a charge that would be overarching, consistent with the actions this council just took relative to consolidation of some plans, groundfish, skate, and monkfish. We're looking for a charge to the Interspecies Committee that would capture the sentiments expressed in the motion, the original motion, not the one to substitute. We're looking for a charge to deal with the expressed concerns of the Division of Marine Fisheries, the New Hampshire Commercial Fishermen's Association, the Conservation Law Foundation, EDF, Pew, the Commercial Hook Association, and a number of others. We're looking for a charge that would be, well, sensitive to the National Marine Fisheries Service response that I highlighted earlier on in the Federal Register. And we're looking for a charge that would be, that would address our concerns about the impacts of allocative effects on inshore and offshore fisheries. Will this motion to substitute do that? I'm not so sure. Maybe it would. I was going to, you know, make a motion for the Interspecies Committee to address the allocative effects and control of fishing privileges resulting from the consolidation of the multi-species skate monkfish FMPs and from the groundfish sector ACEs as they relate to the FMP's social and economic objectives, the council sector management policy, the national policy on catch share management, and the requirements of national standard number 4. I think that would have encompassed especially the motion made by Sally and that was brought forward by the Interspecies Committee, but that's what I was going to do. But we have a motion on the floor right now to substitute that might be sufficient. And if it does address the charges that I think need to be given to the Interspecies Committee, the ones that I just listed, then I suppose I would support this, but I'll have to think about it a little bit more. Okay.
Frank.
Yeah, thank you. With this motion here, I think if it goes back to the committee, the committee is going to need a lot more guidance because right now I'm not sure what it's going to come back with. I would like the council to say what exactly you want us to do. Is it for, like Dr. Pierce just said, for specific fisheries? Is it for everything as a whole? This is probably better than the previous motion. I think it's still going to be too broad to narrow the focus for the committee.
Sally?
Agreed. And I know there's been some discussion since the Interspecies Committee on what those specifics should be. So, again, I'm a little nervous on this being it. So I would hope that if one of two things, if this passes, that an additional follow-on motion is offered to give some specific guidance, because I know there's been discussion about what that specific guidance should be. If it's with respect to figuring out what the baselines are, how to measure changes in consolidation, and therefore the means for the council to figure out how to make sure that there's enough flexibility and enough ability for various portions of the fleet to sustain themselves. So I hope that there's a follow-on to this. There needs to be a follow-on to this. Also, with respect to the potential for a control date, I don't know if the council is going to entertain that today in terms of control date for accumulation limits, or if that might be something that should be further developed by the Groundfish Committee or the Interspecies Committee. But it's specifics like that that need to be discussed here rather than just playing a game of ping pong between council and committee. We need to get specifics like that back to the relevant committee. So I'd suggest that if there are individuals who have ideas to put up there to give those specifics, to add that to this motion, or if not, to let this one carry on through and then have follow-ups, because we're still not quite there. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the discussion, I agree with what Dr. Pierce outlined as the goals. I think the discussion has pretty much outlined where we need to go with this. I'm not averse to developing this further, but it would be my preference to keep it as broad as it is right now with the understanding of where we have to go that has been that's been talked about, I think, very well in this discussion, both with the audience and within the council. As far as the control date is concerned, at this point, I see that as a separate issue, and I would hope that we do have an add-on motion to cover that. I'm not against having an add-on motion. I'm not arguing against what Sally said, but I think that as far as this motion is concerned, that given the depth and the breadth of the discussion, I think that this is sufficient, and I think that it's pretty evident where the Interspecies Committee needs to go with this. Thank you.
Early.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Harry brought up the surf clam, ocean cohog, as a quota system that went wrong. This was implemented about 20 years ago, and I don't think anybody had the foresight to see that what's going to happen down the road. And it's consolidated into a few major players that have a lot of quota. But then there's a lot of trading and selling all back and forth. And there are some minor players. The Mid-Atlantic formed an ad hoc committee. I happen to be a member of that committee to look at excessive shares in the surf clam ocean cohog fishery. And we looked at all different numbers. Is it 25%? Is it 40? Is it 50? 75? Or 100? And we couldn't come up with an answer. And we eventually just said, you know, we can't do it because for now we're trying to do catch up. Because what is, so we couldn't change it. And we sent it back to the FMAT, and that's where it ended. But I guess if I'm going to give advice here is if you're going to put a limit on, you better do it now before you get too far into the plan and the consolidation starts. So if you're going to put a number on, now is the time to do it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this motion is dancing around the issues. I had supported the original motion because I felt it was a definitive first step in addressing the consolidation and diversity issues really directly and adversely impacting the industry as a result of Amendment 16. And had that motion, if that motion was to move ahead, it would have had to have been tasked to the Groundfish Committee. The council can still further task the committee, the Interspecies Committee, with this task. But I mean, we're going divergent ways here, and we have a ground fishery that's in the midst of a huge transition. And I want to go through an academic exercise in trying to fit it with and while the fleet crumbles away. So, you know, it's your call, Mr. Chairman, which way you think is best to proceed. But I mean, I think we've got to move ahead as expediently as possible.
It's your decision how you want to move ahead. If you want to stick with the original motion, vote down Rip's motion. Stick with the original motion. It's really up to you. Do you feel that the original motion accomplishes what you intended it to accomplish when we had this original discussion, when we tasked the Interspecies Committee? Do you feel we're going in the right direction? Are we going to arrive at a point that you hoped we would arrive at when the council tasked the Interspecies Committee? Or do you feel that through reflection, discussion, reading, whatever, that it needs to be broader, it needs to address a wider range of issues, or it needs to go about the original intent in a different way? Those are the decisions you need to make, and that will inform you as to how you're going to vote on these. I merely made a comment early on in this discussion that I didn't feel it was going to accomplish anything and that the Interspecies Committee needed to get more direction and take another bite at it. And I was suggesting that was an opportunity for the council to spend the rest of the time we have under this agenda item to define what it wants the Interspecies Committee to specifically tackle. Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Terry's exactly right. I think we've got two different directions going here, which is why I brought up the issue of the control date. Control date was only to buy a little time, but I think Terry's probably right. I think we've got two motions here that accomplish two completely different things. The problem with the first motion is that it was not specific on where the where it went, and the body of that first motion, it should have been going, as Terry pointed out, it should have gone to the Groundfish Committee, been remanded to the Groundfish Committee. At the same time, I think that the general subject of accumulation limits does need to be taken to the Interspecies Committee for further development with input from industry, specifically with input from industry. And I think we've got two separate things going on here. I think there's merit in both motions. The other motion needs to be specifically directed to the Groundfish Committee. Then I think we're on the right path.
Pat Kirkle.
Well, Terry and Dave captured a lot of the points that I wanted to raise. I don't agree that the Interspecies Committee has enough direction with the motion that's on the board. I just don't agree with that. And I think it's completely unclear at this point to all of us, if we pass this motion, what we'd be moving forward with. Are we talking about groundfish? Are we talking more generally? I thought the previous motion that we were working from was basically a tasking to the Groundfish Committee, and I think we need to be clear about that, because I don't understand the process whether this motion passes or the previous motion passes, exactly what we're going to do. If the intent of this motion is basically to replace the last one, and then we're going to have a discussion that involves giving further guidance to the Interspecies Committee or the Groundfish Committee, then I'm a little more comfortable with it. But frankly, I'm afraid that we're going to pass this motion and we're not going to provide that guidance. So I don't really know what to do, because if you vote for this motion, my fear is that we end up basically where we were at the last council meeting, which is giving this very very vague guidance to the Interspecies Committee, and we're not going to get any further in the Interspecies Committee than we did the last time. If this motion fails, then we've got a motion that everybody's a bit uncomfortable with, and it's not clear where it ends up. So I think my inclination still is to vote this motion down, because I feel like at least the motion before this was movement in some direction. So.
You said you're not sure exactly what to do. I do. We're going to take a 15-minute break.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After a certain amount of discussion, I would like to withdraw my motion.
Is there objection? Seeing none, Rip Cunningham's motion is withdrawn. Dr. Pierce?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, with that action taken, I would make a motion to substitute that is somewhat consistent with some of my earlier remarks, but I've given some further thought and I've made some refinements and I've made it very specific to the Groundfish Committee. Originally, I thought it would be a motion to substitute that would be relevant to the Interspecies Committee, but after further thought, not really. It complicates matters. It's not as specific as it should be. And since this really is about groundfish, my motion will reflect that. So the motion to substitute is, I move that the Groundfish Committee address the allocative effects and excessive control of fishing privileges resulting from groundfish sector ACEs as they relate to the FMP social and economic objectives, the Council Sector Management Policy, the National Policy on on Catch Share Management, and Requirements of National Standard Number 4.
Is there a second? Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion on the motion to substitute. Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I don't know when you want to have the discussion, but at some point we're going to have to know priorities, because this wasn't a priority, and as you know, there is no Groundfish Committee, but that doesn't necessarily mean there isn't a lot of work for the Groundfish Committee to do. We also have to look at a mechanism to look at new sectors coming on board for 2011, which would take a groundfish action. So at some point, we've got to discuss the priorities between a joint groundfish scallop amendment, interspecies efforts, and a groundfish committee effort. I think we can do 2 out of 3.
Thanks, Paul. Sally?
A question about as this relates to individuals. The committee had extensive discussion about accumulation limits being perhaps more relevant as they apply to individuals rather than to sectors. So question to the maker, how do you intend to address that? It reads, at least as I read it here for the first or second time, as this would only apply to sectors, which seems unnecessarily limiting.
Good point, Sally. I actually forgot to put that in there. So if there's no objection on the part of the seconder, it should read, resulting from groundfish sector ACEs, excessive control of groundfish fishing privileges by permit holders. So after privileges, by permit holders, or resulting from groundfish sector ACEs, et cetera.
Seconder agrees, Sally.
Just follow up. I'm just looking over to Jean to make sure that the way that reads is clear enough in terms of individuals or persons, or how it's most appropriate to legally define permit holders. Is that good enough?
I think you might be getting at, are we talking about just permit holders or persons that have ownership interests in permits that may not just be one permit holder? So, I mean, it would be clearer, I guess, if that's what the council wants to do, is to expand this from permit holders or by permit holders or persons having ownership interests in permits, if that's what you're getting at, I think that would be the way to address that particular issue.
So I don't know, would the maker of the substitute agree to replace permit holders with persons that hold ownership interests?
That's fine. That covers it. It's more all-encompassing, and it gets to some of the central issues related to allocation and excessive fishing privileges. Yes.
Seconder agrees.
Ownership interest in permits. In permits right there. Persons that hold ownership interest in permits.
Okay, Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, to Gene. I know that the reference to National Standard 4 is probably redundant in that we have to do that anyway. But from your standpoint, is there any implication by putting that in there that there wasn't adherence to National Standard 4?
Well, I was just actually going to raise the question, is this presuming that there are allocative effects and excessive controls, or do you want to perhaps put potential in front of allocative effects and excessive controls? What was that?
My preference is not to do that.
I would hope that this isn't intended to mean that there were problems with National Standard 4, because we actually addressed this in our response to comments and so forth. The agency's position is that Amendment 16 is consistent with National Standard 4. So to the extent that that was implied in the amendment, if it was implied, I don't know if it was or not, then I think you should avoid that implication if that's your desire. And one way might be to put in, as I say, put in potential allocative effects at the beginning there, instead of just leaving that unqualified.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I think it's my intent is not to say that we are inconsistent with National Standard Number 4. That is, the Amendment 16 is inconsistent. That's not the intent. Okay, this is just to set a path for us to move forward. Clearly, the National Marine Fisheries Service has done a good job, as they always do, in responding to comments made relative to the proposed rule on Amendment 16. I don't necessarily agree with everything they said, but they make a good case. That it's a good description. So the motion is not that's not my intent to suggest that it is consistent.
Comments? Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this. I think this gets us where we need to go. There was one concern I had. As far as priorities is concerned, I would say that at this point that this is very high on the priority list, and I think that given the fact that we're moving to a new management system, that there are a number of issues that are emerging and that will emerge, and that's been seen in other areas that put cash share management in effect. I think that we need to, if necessary, reconstitute the Ground Fish Committee or task the current Ground Fish /Scallop Committee with this, as well as some other issues that have come up. There are a number of them, as we've spoken about. In fact, a rather extensive list of unintended consequences that need to be addressed, and I think that we do need to move groundfish back onto the priority list.
Any other comments? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Seven, unanimous. Sometimes breaks work. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. In order to help move this effort along and facilitate the committee's work, I've got a motion.
Okay, so that was a motion to substitute, right, Dave? So we need to vote one more time on the same motion. Okay. Ready for the question? Yep. Paul Howard?
Just to add a little more detail, Gene, I assume that this may be an amendment. In other words, an amendment 17 or something, because it deals with allocation and probably significant or...
You mean as opposed to a framework?
As a framework with a...
Yes, I think it would definitely have to be an amendment.
Okay, so the intent would be we'd start scoping and notice of intent to do an amendment with this. Not that we'd take this and do what an interspecies committee would do and bring some options and then decide to go forward. We're going to go forward with an amendment in groundfish to look at cap excessive shares.
Dave Prell.
Yeah, I recall that some time ago we actually did initiate Amendment 17. It was voted to begin it, but not actually do any work. I don't recall exactly how that panned out, but I know that there is an Amendment 17 already initiated.
Yeah, that was in Portland back in 1947, I think. No, I think it was two or three years ago. I think you're right. And it was, I believe, at the Eastland Park Hotel. All right. We've got to vote on this one more time. We're ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Terry?
Yes, all right. Karen, are you ready? Okay, I move to request staff develop a white paper on groundfish fleet diversity and accumulation limits. One, that provides definitions of fleet diversity as used by other multi-species fisheries. Two, that outlines baselines and potential measures for the northeast groundfish fishery. And three, that provides an initial analysis to outline the range of outcomes.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion. Terry.
We had quite a long discussion about this at the Interspecies Committee meeting, and at the end of the day, the motion at that time failed 4-5. I was one that voted against it because at that point it was confusing to me what our goals were. I think today's discussion has helped clear some of the cobwebs, and I think this white paper will help us all move ahead.
Anything further? Sally?
There's no date by which this might be finished. Could we get some feedback from staff on when this could be done?
Paul?
I think, you know, Tom can answer this specific thing, but it would also deal with, do you still want the groundfish scallop bycatch sectors to go forward, and do you still want interspecies to committee to go forward with some things? I don't know what where we're going with interspecies at this point, but we seem to have three priorities: a groundfish committee with priorities, a joint groundfish and scallop committee, and an interspecies committee. And that's, you know, we can't accomplish all three efforts.
Dave.
Yeah, I would suggest that we actually hold this discussion tomorrow after the groundfish scallop discussion and see if that's still on the table. You know, absent of knowing where we're going to be tomorrow at this time, it's kind of hard to hold a discussion in advance. And then we may have to prioritize it based on how that discussion comes out.
I think that's a good idea, Dave. Anything further? Frank Blount.
I'm a little concerned on this one where it says on number two that outlines the baselines. I understand that, but in potential measures for the northeast ground fishery, there could be thousands of potential measures for the northeast ground fishery. So I think we're telling staff to come up with how they want to see the fleet look and different various measures. I think we would have to tell the staff what the potential measures are that we think are acceptable.
Jimmy?
Well, I had a similar thought. Potential measures to do what? It's too open-ended, and I can't support the motion.
Sally?
So the challenge that we had at the committee was that there was a motion that was offered that was specific, and there was some good discussion about the potential for assessing different types of limits, sector limits, individual limits, vessel usage limits, and it was pointed out during that, you know, vessel usage limits is essentially days at sea. So we had that whole discussion round and round. Now, you know, this motion is a little more general, partly in response to the discussion at the committee meeting where people were concerned that we were being too specific and too narrow. So I don't know if the if staff can take a look at some of the ideas that maybe we'll discuss today and give them a little more direction, that we want them to look at ownership limits. We want to look at the potential for sector limits, as David Pierce has raised. And you know, just to give them some direction. I agree that this is much more general, but it's a response to, you know, the committee wasn't able to come to agreement on the specifics.
Jimmy?
Yeah, one other, I forgot when I spoke, but in the other thing, outlines baselines as of when?
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, relative to the baseline, we really don't have a baseline, I don't think we do. I suppose we would have a baseline if the analyses in Amendment 16 that was submitted as part of the amendment, if those analyses really capture as best we can capture anything related to groundfish management, if they capture what exactly we think is going to happen come May 1 with widespread sector management. You know, the social and economic impact of all of the actions that have been taken that will be implemented on May 1. You know, I'll say again, I still don't know what will happen come May 1 or June 1 or July 1. I have some speculations, but don't know. And the socioeconomic impact is... well, it's going to be severe. But in terms of what the groundfish fleet will look like on May 1 or June 1 or July 1, I don't think we predicted that or projected it as part of the analyses for Amendment 16. That was something we could not do because of all the uncertainties relative to what the hard quotas would be, who were going to be in the sectors, sector membership, what is it? Well, we'll know come May 1. So I think that there's quite a bit of work to be done. Staff has not been charged to do this yet because they're already doing other things related to groundfish. But, again, a retrospective look at now that we know what it is, now that we can actually touch, feel Amendment 16, we know what how many sectors there are, we know what the membership is, who are in the members, we know what the sector allocations, the ACEs are. An analysis now to look at that would be useful and would help establish a baseline, yes, an uncertain baseline, but still far better than the baseline that we don't have now. So I understand where Terry's coming from. I wish we did have a baseline to use, but I don't think we have it yet because we don't know what the outcome of Amendment 16 will be. Now, if I'm wrong, I mean, if staff has already done that job, if it already is well-defined and described in Amendment 16 documentation, then, okay, we have a baseline we can reference. So if I'm wrong, please let me know. But if I'm right, then how do we get that baseline to know what we have done and to know, therefore, how we want to change that which we have done to deal with the issue of excessive fishing privileges, you know, allocative effects, all of that.
Dave?
Right. You will have a baseline on April 30th. You will, you know, when the new fishing year starts, you'll have a baseline. You'll know how many boats are in the sectors, what they have on an individual permit basis for ACE, and you'll know what boats are in the common pool and how many days they have to fish. And you can break it down by gear type. You can break it down by size of vessel, whatever, you know, whatever that you choose to get a report on. But you're right. We don't have a baseline until April 30th because even though most of the sectors, I'm sure, have closed their memberships and said you're in or you're out, it's not official until April 30th.
Gary?
Yeah. Following the long and complicated discussion we had at the Interspecies Committee, my intent was not to be specific. We got wrapped around every detail that day that we didn't today. And to give the staff and the latitude to do some work to help us out. And by directing exactly what it should be, I felt would be counterintuitive to getting as good a product as possible.
Anyone else on the council? Mark Gibson.
Thanks. I just wanted to follow up on some of Dave Pierce's thoughts. It seems to me if there's going to be effort invested in this white paper, it ought to characterize fleet diversity at some point prior to A16, and as Dave Gaethel suggested, our best crack at what it will look like on May 1st, given the decisions that individuals have made. But then there ought to be a council vision as to what that fleet diversity ought to look like, and there ought to be a suggestion for how we track that, how we track the actual diversity relative to that vision. I have some thoughts on how diversity could be quantified. It's very similar to what's done in, at least my thought, on animal populations. We have categorized them in terms of the number of species and the number of individuals that fall within species, and there are quantitative ways to index that. Well, you could do the same thing for the fleet by deciding on the number of categories and the number of individuals that fall within that categories and develop a quantitative index of that so-called fleet diversity. And that could be done retrospectively to any point in time that the data is available, and it could be quantified given our best understanding of what might happen on May 1st. And it could also be quantified on a regular basis for tracking performance to see how it matches up with the vision. That presupposes that we have a vision. So things are a little bit before the horse here, but that's just some thoughts that I have on that. And I don't know if Tom Neese is still in the room. This probably becomes his job to do, but I certainly would share some ideas with him when at an appropriate time.
Okay, anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed. 3 opposed. Abstentions, 0. Motion carries 14-3. Anything else, Frank? Any other business? Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in terms of direction back to the Ground Fish Committee. One other item that was on the agenda for today is consideration of an accumulation limit control date. So I would move then to direct the Ground Fish Committee to provide recommendations to the Council at its next meeting on establishing an accumulation limit control date. So this motion doesn't establish one or suggest that the council does so today, but rather has the committee provide some guidance on whether this is something that the council should request NIMFS should do.
Okay, the motion's on the board. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaethel. Discussion, Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, if Sally would please explain. I don't understand what is meant by this motion. What could you elaborate?
So the regional administrator could be requested by the council to publish a control date, after which any quota or permits that might be acquired by an individual would then potentially be subject to requirements for divesting, relinquishing, depending on what accumulation limits the council might establish. So the control date says from this day forward, there may be accumulation limits that are set for groundfish species. Now, I'm not suggesting that we do this right now, because clearly a control date of this nature, I think we can see it as it's almost something like a tourniquet, and we're not really sure exactly what we're applying it to. So that's why I'm asking the committee to take a look at it and understand if we want to establish a control date, and if so, what the nature and makeup of the fishery is right now that might be essentially grandfathered in under a control date that would be set right now, where we might even want higher or lower accumulation limits set for various species. You're still looking confused.
Yes, because the amount of accumulated limit that a particular person or entity might have is not set in stone. It's not a right. It's, again, just an allocation, a privilege of sort that can be changed at any time. So once we determine what we want for accumulation limits, we could then, through action, adopt those limits and implement those limits. I'm having trouble understanding the need for a control date. You did a good job explaining it. I just can't see the sense of it.
There might not be a need for a control date. The Groundfish Committee might be able to come up with the baseline and then measures to establish appropriate accumulation limits for all the groundfish species, in which case a control date would not be necessary. I'm suggesting that the committee look at this in case, as has been the case with the Interspecies Committee, there is a challenge in coming up with what those actual accumulation limits should be. So this is something that sends a clear signal to industry that the council is serious about considering what the accumulation limit should be. It also provides a potential backup for another means to establish accumulation limits if we can't figure out what they should be on a species-by-species basis. So this is much broader than what hopefully the committee will be able to come up with, but a backup plan, I suppose.
Rodney.
Got to learn how to work the mic. Thank you. I'm uncomfortable with a control date on this. This is like a race to fish. If everybody wants to get accumulated limits, they're going to do it before that date. This might even force people to go buy stuff that they don't want to buy now because of a control date. So I'm very uncomfortable with a control date. I'm not uncomfortable with accumulation limits.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at this motion, the way it's written, it presumes that the Groundfish Committee gets reconstituted prior to the June meeting and actually has a meeting prior to the June meeting, both of which we don't know.
Jimmy?
Yeah, I want to go back to something I said this morning to about credit and banking, and that we passed Amendment 16 fully, at least I thought, so that and designed it somewhat so that it would be a free flow here so people could balance out their needs. We clearly know that almost all the people in the fisheries do not have enough quota as they have it now. Nobody has enough to make it. So we know, and we designed it so that they could balance out what their needs are. And now, I can tell you that banks will look at this and say, there's too much risk. We cannot finance these people. And somebody said that, well, I don't care because, you know, if you can't get credit, too bad. But this hurts the small guy. It hurts the guy that doesn't have enough to survive. He has no way out. If there can't be somebody else to buy him, and if a small guy can find credit and wants to buy somebody else, he can't do it. And I can tell you, I will be getting calls from different banks that will say, what's going on? You know, and I don't think that's what we need to do with this particular point in Amendment 16. We need to get this thing balanced a little bit so that people can have a chance at survival. And this will just throw cold water on that. So I'm opposed to it. I think when you do something like this, it's the little guy that's on the edge that's going to get killed both ways. The guy that needs to sell because no way he can make it, and the guy that needs to buy a little more or he can't make it. You know, it'll go bank. The people have to go through bankruptcy, and somebody that doesn't need credit will pick them off. You know, so I think it's the wrong direction to go. I think we need to let the committee do the work that we just previously laid out and let this thing settle a little bit. I mean, there's $20 million of money that I can add up that's being spent, has been or is going to be earmarked to spend for community permit banks. That ought to give people a pretty good comfort level that there's going to be community banks that will preserve these communities as best you can for a while so we can move on with the work that we previously laid out. So I'm opposed to this motion.
David?
Yeah. In Amendment 13 and Framework 42, we had accumulation limits. They were the 10, 10, 20. You could only lease within a certain range. We have removed everything in Amendment 16. There is nothing now that prevents somebody from coming in with a very large vessel and accumulating a number of small vessels. And what all this is saying is, if you do that, you do it at your own risk. It's not saying that there will be a date. It's not, and it's not saying what a number is. It's just saying that there's an element of risk involved, and you should be aware of that. That I've seen it. I saw it in New Hampshire at the meeting they had up there to explain the sectors. People were actively working the crowd, saying, "I'll buy you fish. I'll buy you a permit." And you know, that speculation to me is dangerous. Absent a full discussion of what limits we want to put on it. Now, if we had, in Amendment 16, put in the limits we had in Days at Sea Leasing, that you could only accumulate fish from boats within, 10% of your size, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. But we didn't do that. So right now, there is still nothing, as it currently exists, to keep a handful of people that have access to credit from sucking up this fishery before this council can react. And all this is saying to those people is, do it. Go ahead and do it. But you're doing it at your own risk, and we might force you to divest yourself of some of that at a future date. So I personally do support the motion. I think it's necessary to provide some balance to people while the dust settles out here in the next 6 months and we try out this program and see whether it works or not.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Rodney. I think putting out a control date will only accelerate the, purchasing and agreements that people make. I mean, people see that date and they see where they're at and try to look to the future and where they want to be. And I think it just creates, just a date that's going to make, all of this trading back and forth and purchasing and selling accelerate greatly. So I understand the intent, but I think that the actual outcome is going to be something different. I understand David's concerns, but again, I think this will not meet his needs either. So I do not support the motion.
Anything further? Sally?
Thank you. 2 points. On the permit banks, yes, I think those are important especially for the 4 out of the 5 coastal states that actually received funds from NOAA for permit banks. One state did not receive funds for permit banks, so there are some that aren't going to have access to that opportunity. Second, just to be clear, this is something that would go back to the committee for consideration as an option for considering how to
control accumulation. It's an option, and I think it should be on the table when the committee reconvenes, so that we have that as a potential route to control accumulation limits if the committee and then the council isn't able to come up with something else. Thank you.
Maggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree that this is sending the wrong message to the industry. There are people who are desperately trying to find somebody now to buy their permit so that they don't lose their house. And to send a message that, you know, that permit may then be retracted from a potential buyer is the wrong message to send. If the council wants to send a message about accumulation limits, then we should have a discussion now about what the council thinks is an appropriate cap. What do individuals in the council think is the limit that one individual should accumulate? So then that number is out there, and then people know basically where the council is going with this. But to just throw out a date that says, or the potential for a date that says after this date you may have to divest, is a very disconcerting message to send at this time, and I would urge you not to do that. Instead, I would urge you, if you were serious about establishing accumulation limits, let's talk about some numbers. What do you think is the limit? And then people will know not to go over that limit, or they'll know that they're over that limit and they may have to deal with it. But this is just too vague and too troubling at this very difficult time for people who are desperately trying to get out from under a bunch of debt, not just on their boats and their permits, but their homes. And then, yes, some people are bailing them out because they have some capital or they have some access to that capital. That's not, I mean, it's not a great situation. Nobody feels good about that fact that people have to leave the fishery, but it is a fact. It is what's happening. And again, if you're concerned that somebody's going to buy too much or that a whole community is going to be wiped out, I mean, what are you going to do? Tell that community, no, you can't sell because we're concerned that your community is going to be wiped out, so you as an individual have to stay in? I mean, you really need to think about the message that you're sending here and how troubling that message is at this very, very difficult time for everybody moving into this new system. So, again, if you want caps, tell us what they are now, and we'll try to figure out how to make that work.
Jim.
Jim Kendall and the Bedford Seaford Consulting. I'd like to say I agree with a lot of what Maggie said to you about this. I'd point out that the old saying that says that those that don't look back at history are doomed to repeat their same mistakes. In saying that, I'll give you an example. General category scallops. The council debated installing a control date for I don't know how long. I cautioned them that if we're going to have a control date, we should establish it then and say from this point forward. Don't say we're going to put one up in the very near future and force everyone to take an action one way or the other. You ended up with over 2,000 permits who ended in the end had very little history, and so in the long run, they got rid of them. If you do this now and you force people to make a desperation move and then change something down the line, you've altered it all over again with little understanding of what you're doing and what the industry can expect. So, as Maggie said, if you're going to come up with some sort of cap or some sort of limitations, put it on the table now so people understand what they're dealing with and not force them to take steps into the unknown. I think it's a much better approach to that. We know in the past that we've talked about 10% caps and so forth and so on. So when you develop the cap, you also need to be very clear about how this would affect people who already exceed those numbers, if they do in fact exceed them, rather than try and raise the limit up so that you don't exclude anyone because they already exceed that limit. So those are two of the things you need to put right on the table right up quick so people can get on with their life and continue to figure out how they're going to do it and just not force them. Thank you.
Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz. There's something I don't quite understand here. Establishing an accumulation limit, is that an accumulation limit on ACE?
Go to the maker of the motion.
The intent was accumulation limit for individuals, not for sectors.
But it's a limit on what? Number of permits? On pounds? What's the terms? By species?
I would assume that it would probably be by species and as a percentage of the total TAC.
And the way I understand it, that the council at any time could change the percentages. There's nothing that guarantees these percentages in perpetuity. We're not talking about. So you guys could decide. I like to use you guys. The council can decide that in the next groundfish action that there's some imbalance, and you could rearrange the numbers. You're not. You haven't granted ownership of anything to anybody. So I don't understand the need for the action, unless I'm wrong. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out whether the council has the right in a framework or an amendment, which mechanism, to change the balance. Decide, for example, that they, going with history, did not match the current fishery, for example, so that you need to rebalance and readjust the numbers, or that one particular sector has is not meeting the various national standards for some reason, so that you come in and readjust it. You haven't granted anybody anything. You've set a set of parameters for this first fishing year, if you will, and you could adjust them. Do I have that wrong? I mean, I don't. It seems you could move fish around whichever which way you please. Pound, species.
Pat.
No, you're right. The council has not, the council, the agency, the federal government has not granted anything in perpetuity to anyone. These are privileges, not rights. They could be changed at any time. But, of course, historically, we have used control dates to notify people that there is discussion of potentially changing things, and to put them on notice that if they make decisions, that those decisions may be inconsistent with a decision that the council, with an action that the council has under discussion. So it's a notice to people that the council is considering these kinds of things.
Was there a control date issued, for example, to notify the scallop fleet that you were going to reduce their historical bycatch from 100% to 90%? I mean, I don't know when you want to use control dates and when you don't use control dates.
One really big difference between that is that the scallopers didn't buy anything. And in this situation, people could be buying permits that would be ultimately make them exceed any kind of accumulation limit that the council may think is appropriate. So that's I think, the big difference.
So if we move forward with a plan that allows a monkfish fleet or scallop fleet to buy or trade or lease groundfish, then we would need to put out a control date for that?
I think that would probably be part of a discussion we would have at that point, Ron. Okay, we're behind schedule. We have two guests here to present a report to us before lunch. They've been waiting patiently. I want to bring it back to the council on the motion on the board. Anything further? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Five. Opposed. Eleven. Abstention. One. Motion fails. 5-11. One abstention. You're all set, Frank? Anything further? Anything under interspecies? Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I think Frank may have inadvertently skipped one of the motions we had, which was about the programmatic EIS. I don't know if you wanted to discuss that or not.
Yeah, that was a committee motion to direct the staff, and that's to report back to the committee before it comes to the council. So I didn't think it was a need to bring it to the council. We can, but...
I'd had the sidebar with Frank about that. Was the explanation he gave me. I think thanks for bringing that up, Eagle Eye. Maybe we'll hear about it in June. Maybe we won't, depending upon what the committee does with it. Thank you. Okay, that concludes interspecies. We'll quickly try to shift into our next agenda. 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 Try to shift into our next agenda.